The Joy of Pediatrics and Provider Well-Being, presented by Joseph P. Sherman, Associate Clinical Professor in the Department of Pediatrics, University of Washington School of Medicine, Seattle, and Health Services Director at Mary's Place Family Shelter in Seattle. Dr. Sherman spoke at the 41st Annual Pediatric Primary Care Conference, Pediatrics at the Beach, presented by Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine, Richmond, VCU Health, Department of Pediatrics, and Department of Continuing Medical Education. Dr. Sherman.
Thank you very much for inviting me to come and talk. I have to take a breath because I think as medical providers, as pediatric providers, sometimes we're kind of behind and trying to catch up constantly with the ever-changing environment of medicine. First of all, I'd like to thank MCV VCU for 4 years of medical education that I think really formed me to be the pediatrician and more the person that I became, and many of the mentors that I had for both medical school and residency. Not only the professors, wise mentors, but probably more so in Richmond, the people of Richmond, Virginia. Most of the people that were patients of mine in medical school and residency in Richmond really had no other choice. They had nowhere else to go. They ended up being patients at MCV Hospital and literally allowed themselves and their children to be practiced upon by me, a medical student and pediatrician who really didn't know what he was doing. And they really were my true mentors. They were my true professors. And I have to say, for physicians and nurse practitioners, PAs, other APCs, that we do owe a debt of gratitude to our patients for helping us train. In February of 2010, I came home from work and I received a phone call. And I picked up the phone and the voice on the other line said, "Is this Joseph Sherman? Joseph Sherman, who is a pediatrician and was an intern at MCV Hospital in 1985. Now, when you receive a phone call like this, the first thing I think of is, oh my God, what the hell did I do that's coming back to haunt me now? So I just took a deep breath and I said, yes, that's me. And then the voice on the other line said, "Well, I wanted to call to try to get your address because I want to send you a thank you card." I said, "Phew, okay. I don't have to call my lawyer. I want to send you a thank you card because you probably don't remember me. But back when you were an intern in the NICU at MCV, you were my baby's doctor. And my baby was born 3 months early, weighed 2 pounds, and was born addicted to heroin because I had used heroin throughout my entire pregnancy. And I was feeling very guilty and feeling fairly depressed. And everyone around me in that hospital made me feel pretty bad about the kind of mother that I was. But you, as an intern, you came in to my hospital room and you were telling me about my little baby, that he would be fine. And by saying that and listening to me, I was able to have the strength to eventually stop using. I've been in recovery ever since. My child grew up and he survived and thrived. And I wanted to call to thank you for saying that to me. I was an intern in the NICU, so obviously I didn't know what the hell I was saying. And maybe it was my attending, I don't know, it was John Mickle, Tony Napolitano, one of those people that said, you know, we know how to treat neonatal abstinence syndrome. We didn't call it that then. We know how to treat withdrawal. And this baby has a pretty good prognosis despite being born so young. So after that phone call, she said, I just want to get your address because my son just graduated from college and I wanted to send you a picture of him so that you could see how well he was doing. Now, what she didn't know was that just a few months before that, my family and I returned from living in Bolivia for 4 years. We were with a mission group called the Mary Nole Missioners. And we were in Cochabamba, Bolivia, outside of Cochabamba, Bolivia, living and working there amongst the indigenous Quechua people of the Andes. People that made us feel very much at home. People that appreciated everything about who we were. My wife, my 5-year-old son, Josh, my 3-year-old daughter, Celia. And we were there for 4 years. And it was a time for me where I truly felt like I experienced who I am as a pediatrician. But I came back to Seattle. I got a position at the University of Washington Hospital in the Department of Pediatrics, working in Harborview. It was a county hospital in King County, Seattle. And I was working in the outpatient pediatric clinic. What we didn't know when we were living in Bolivia, in our small town of Chilimarca up in the mountains, was that something happened in the United States in 2008 where the economy kind of crashed. Now, that didn't really affect our lives in our small town in Bolivia, but it did affect everything in the United States. So we came back, I got a position at Harborview, and I went from my rural community where I felt like everything about me came alive back to a medical center that I thought was the right move to make, teaching and working in a place that had eliminated half of the support staff, all of the RNs from the primary care clinics to save money. And the only providers in the clinic were residents coming a half a day a week, supervised by attendings in general pediatrics who did primarily research, except for a half a day a week where they would precept. They had fired and gotten rid of everyone. And the director of pediatrics said, we have no one to take care of the most complex patients. So I took the job. So I took the job and I went into a broken system that had overloaded the providers and everyone who was working in the clinic. And being that pediatrician and that doctor that thought, okay, I'm going to survive. I'm not even going to survive. I'm going to be the one that fixes it all. So people would come to me and say, I'm miserable. I don't know what to do. I can't stand my clinic manager. Let me hide. I'm scared. And frankly, I was kind of scared too. So I was becoming more anxious. I would come home more distant from my family. And the way I reacted to that was work harder. That was what I was taught. Put your head down. Keep going. You can do it. You got to get through med school, get through residency, get to the next job, get to whatever it is. And I kept doing this until I felt anxious, depressed, really feeling like I wasn't sure where I was anymore or who I was. And that's when that phone call came. About a week later, I received a card in the mail. And in that card, I opened it up and read the letter. And it said, Dear Dr. Sherman, although this card is 24 years late, I personally wanted to thank you. On behalf of my family, your kindness really meant a lot during that time period in our lives. As Mark, I'm not using anyone's real names, as Mark reaches this milestone in his life, I reflect back on the days spent at MCV, not sure of his future, and hear the reassurance and encouragement in your voice that he would be fine. As you can see from his picture, the 2-pound kid did turn out just fine, all thanks to a kid fresh out of med school named Joe. May God continue to bless you and your family. Sincerely, Brenda Holmes. And despite all the technology, and we didn't have UberCare and all of that, but all the technology that was at that time relatively new, the thing that really meant the difference was a few words by some intern that really didn't know what he was saying. Joy. This is the key. Joy, I believe. What is joy? Joy is something other than happiness. Happiness is something that happens to us outside. It's something that, wow, I'm happy, I'm playing, I'm out in the ocean and being able to swim. And it's kind of fleeting. It goes away. Joy is something that happens when you least expect it. That phone call for me brought joy. Eventually, for myself, as I sunk deeper and deeper into anxiety and depression, I had to leave my job, became full-time professor at a university. I took care of our teenage kids at the time, middle school teenagers, and really spent a lot of time thinking about who I was, not what I do, who I am. Because at that time in Bolivia, I discovered what that was. To me, that's the key, to not only be able to survive in this healthcare system, but to thrive, to really do well. Joy simply happens when you least expect it. It's a physical, emotional, and spiritual experience. You feel it. When I got the phone call, I was like, wow. Pay attention to the way your body feels when you have encounters. It has certain components, and it has to be with vulnerability, gratitude, love. What I mean by that is that sometimes something happens. Maybe you have an encounter with a family in the midst of everything. Something happens when you're in the exam room, and all of a sudden, this parent looks at you and begins to cry because this new mom doesn't believe that she knows really how to be a mom. The breastfeeding isn't working. Her baby isn't gaining weight. She's scared to death. She feels inadequate. And that is the time that you can do one of two things. You can say, oh my God, how long am I going to be in this exam room? I still have three patients waiting for me. I better get the hell out of here. Or you can turn from the computer and say, I really don't care what boxes I click right now because this person in front of me needs my help. All this person in front of me needs me to do is to stop and listen and be here. So you need to be a little vulnerable. You have to be able to say, okay, I'm willing to do that. And with it, I'm going to say, wow, thank you that I have this job, that I'm able to be a pediatrician or a pediatric nurse practitioner or a PA. It comes with love for yourself and for other people. And it has to be practiced to be sustained. If you do it, it doesn't just come easily. You have to practice gratitude, think about those things, and really feel it. Everyone who is able to, please stand up. Now, I want you to turn to someone next to you and introduce yourselves very briefly. Okay, time's up. Don't go too far. Okay. That's it. Time's up. Now, what I'd like you to do is to take turns, and I want you to do this. I'm going to time you, and I want you each to take 1 minute each. 1 minute. And I want you to answer this question.
What you going to ask me?
It's a simple question. But the other person, take turns. Right now, pick one person. And who's going to go first? Do that right now. Decide. Ready? Decide. Done. Time's up. One person listens. The other person talks. The person who's listening doesn't say a word. Not one word. Just listens completely to the other person for a minute, okay? Not one word. And then I'm going to say switch. And here's the question. What's your favorite restaurant and why? Okay? Don't think too much about it. Don't think, oh, God, I love Indian food, but then if I want Asian, I want to go there. I'm not looking for recommendations. I'm just looking for you to communicate. Okay, first person, go. And stop. Take a deep breath. Now switch and the other person talk, go. And stop. Okay, take a deep breath. Great. Okay, you can sit down. Great. Time's up. No more. Okay. So I want you to think about a couple of things. One is, what did it feel like to be listened to by another person fully without being interrupted or anything else? Unusual. What else?
It felt like what you're saying mattered.
What I say matters because the other person didn't talk, right? What else?
Hungry.
What else?
Awkward.
This is unusual. What did it feel like to be on the other side, to be the person that couldn't say anything, just listened?
Hard, really hard.
Because usually the way that conversation goes is, wow, there's this great Asian restaurant in Seattle that I really love. And when I, oh my God, you know, where I live in Richmond, their Asian restaurant down there, oh my God, it's the same thing. You know, it's like, we don't have Asian. Well, the Asian restaurant that I love, as I was saying, is down here. It's like, oh my God, you know, you just can't get Asian food. It's like, whoa. So being able to listen and to be listened to is something that we lack a lot of times in medicine these days. And it's really what people are looking for, not only patients, but also each other. We pass each other up in our clinics, our practices. We each kind of run in our own little worlds and we pass each other in the hallway and we don't have many venues to share our experiences, even what our best restaurant is. We function in a broken healthcare system. And what that provides is more demands on providers, and that leads to burnout. And we hear all about burnout. And the reason that I didn't want this talk to be burnout in physicians is that I'm tired of hearing about burnout, right? I hear burnout, I see burnout, it's not bringing me joy. It's not very positive. I did a consultation for a healthcare system around here that asked me to come and, can you find out and survey everyone for the amount of burnout that we have, and then tell us what to do about it. And do, it's like, great. I said, let me save your time and money. Don't bother surveying about burnout. I can tell you it's there. We spend too much time surveying and trying to find it. It's there. We don't do enough about it. So what's the physician reaction? Well, we do what we did in training, physician, and I have to please apologize for when I use physician instead of provider, because without APCs, our future in primary care, pediatrics or whatever, will be doomed. So thank you very much for being here. Thank you, nurse practitioners, PAs, everyone who helps all of us. And also, we learn to help you. We work longer hours. Damn it, there's a challenge and we're gonna do it. We do our charting at home. Most physicians that I talk to in primary care, pediatrics, spend an average of 2 to 3 hours a day at home doing their charting. We want to prove we can do it. You want to make us do it? We're mad as hell. We don't deserve it, but we're going to show you. Even though we shouldn't be doing it, we're doing it. We suffer. We complain. We disconnect. We feel stuck. Some of us can get to the point of depression, anxiety. The rate of suicide amongst physicians in the U.S. is twice the national average. There is a physician who commits suicide every day in the U.S. My wife is a clinical psychologist. She runs a therapy practice. More than half of her patients are physicians referred by healthcare systems. Our healthcare systems have valuable assets in physicians, PAs, nurse practitioners. It's now been estimated that the cost of replacing a physician for a healthcare corporation on the average across the board has now mounted to over $1 million to replace someone who's burned out, quits, leaves. You think you could invest in a scribe or a MA or somebody else that might cost less than $1 million? The system's response is, we'll do another EHR upgrade. This will make it easier for you. This box is now going to be found on 5 different screens instead of 1. So if you're like me that can't even like use my fingers to text and I keep dictating and it says the wrong thing after I'm finished, that you're going to have trouble. Public shame is really good. That works. We're going to publish and send out a list of everyone who hasn't gotten their charts completed. We're going to send it out to everybody in the system so that they all know who's the most delinquent on doing their charts. Because our patients are complaining constantly to us. The other thing is increased pay. We say, okay, we're going to increase your pay because it's too hard to figure out how else to fix the system. It's easier just to give you some more money and you'll say, okay, I'll suffer longer because I make more money. We'll give you some coaching. I'm a physician coach, healthcare provider coach, not the kind of coaching that helps you figure out who you are and where you fit in and what you can do, but the kind of coaching that helps you finish your chart and close it before the end of the day. Hey, we'll give you a gym membership because that's wellness. I'm sure that will help you see more patients. Self-care. That's another word that, my God, why has it been hijacked? Self-care is what health institutions say you need to learn when you're struggling to function in a dysfunctional healthcare system. Self-care is so important, and it's been overused like burnout. This is what we're suffering, moral injury, Simon Talbot, Wendy Dean. We go through all of these things, and we are trying our best to give the best care for our patients. We're failing to consistently meet the patient's needs. It has a profound impact on physician and healthcare provider well-being. It is moral injury, not burnout. We can't do what we're called to do. We have a crisis of spiritual connection. Now, spirituality by Brené Brown, it's one of my favorite TED Talk people. Spirituality is a deeply held belief that we are inextricably connected to each other by something greater than us. Something rooted in love and compassion. It can't be severed, but it can be forgotten. In a survey by Tate Shanafelt in 2009, does a lot of work with burnout internists. These are the top 3 things that healthcare providers say are the least satisfying factors in practice. Administrative paperwork duties, erosion of clinical autonomy, inefficient EHR design. You look at these things, if you want to be the head of a healthcare corporation, you can have an impact on this. If you're like me, and I am a healthcare provider in a network of 8 overnight family shelters for families experiencing homelessness in Seattle, I can't impact a lot of these things, and I don't want to spend a lot of energy, so I can complain and complain and complain. But look at this list. What are the most satisfying factors in your practice? Patient relationships, intellectual stimulation, interaction with colleagues. You just had an interaction with a colleague, the satisfying experience. These are things that we can impact. Let's concentrate on the things we have a chance to do something about. When I did a retreat for a pediatric practice that served a low-income population in Tacoma, Washington. This is what they said when asked the question, what brings you joy? Why do you come in to work in this place? It's so interesting. I have to say, coworkers was number one. Actually, it was also number one for what frustrates you the most about them. And we as pediatricians, we have a chance to do something to find joy in our practice amidst all of this. Why? Because we get to hang out with kids. Isn't it great? The poor internists, you know, they're stuck. Sorry if there are any in here. Med peds and everything. Sorry. Primary goal in life for kids is to have as much fun as possible. They say and do whatever comes to their minds without inhibition. Forces us to be in the moment, forces us to be vulnerable. They love freely, they cry freely, they laugh freely. They truly live in the moment, right? Can you do this if you're an internist? Joy is the feeling you get when you're closest to matching soul to role in your work. Now, I'm not talking about soul that needs to be saved. I'm talking about soul that is there, that is part of you that's always there. And when you do your work, if you can say, I am truly present, then that's what you're doing. Here's what I'd like to do. I have a little bit of time. I want you now to take that same person that you shared your restaurant story with. And I want you to do this. Think for a moment. I want you to recall a moment in your workday when you experienced a sense of joy, you felt inspired, felt most alive. You felt like, this is why I went into pediatrics, okay? Again, I don't want you to think about the moment. I want you to think about a moment. We don't have a lot of time. But what I would like you to do now is to take some time quietly and think about that. Just one moment in time and what it felt like. Not the time that you felt like, oh my God, I'm never going to get out of here. Because let me tell you something. When you're on your deathbed and your loved ones are around you, you're not going to go, I remember that day that I was double booked. I was able to see 30 kids in one day and have all my charts closed by the end of the day. Ain't going to be that. It's going to be the time that I love the most. It was going to be the time that I felt most present. It's going to be the time that I took the time to be with people. So take a minute and think about that and some of those factors. Now you have it in your mind, and I'm really speeding this up. This is a practice that I think is advisable for everyone to do on a regular basis, a practice of gratitude that brings you joy. Now I want you to take turns with each other, and I'm only going to give you 1 minute. And the reason I'm going to give you 1 minute is because I want you to taste what it's like and then go back and do it again when you go back to your practices. Because the way I look at burnout and the way that I look at increasing joy in practice is concentric spheres of influence. It starts with yourself. It moves to the people around you who you interact with every day. It moves then to those people around you that are seeing this group of people that share their experiences and what brings them joy. From the outside, they look at you and they go, what the hell's going on with that group? How come they're so happy and we're miserable? But wait, when they are miserable, then they're sharing, not complaining, but actually talking about each other, how they can help each other. And that has the system influenced on the outside. So take a minute, turn to your person. 1 minute, just talk about that experience, and then we'll switch. The other person, just listen. You are able to nod and go like, wow, that was great. All right? You're just not able to stop and sabotage it by saying, I had that same experience. Okay, go. Okay. wrap it up and stop, please. Take a deep breath. Ah. Now switch and the other person tell their story. And stop. And stop. Thank you. Great. Okay. Take a deep breath. Ah, wonderful. Okay. Now, tell me one word, two words, three words, or whatever. I want you to tell me what you heard as you listened, not the whole story. I want you to tell me the feeling that you heard. Empathy. What else?
Connection.
Love. Gratitude. Fulfillment.
Satisfaction.
Validation. Joy. Laughter. Okay. Pay attention to these things. And the reason I say this is one of many exercises to do in reflecting. A life without reflection is not worth living. Socrates, great pediatrician. This is important. You pay attention because the thing is, these are the elements inside of you that bring you joy. This is who you are, right? Not what you do. What I realized after falling and crashing and then rising back up and stumbling and rising and still trying to figure my way out is that I can identify those things that bring me joy of who I am, what is true about me, whether I'm a pediatrician, whether I'm dancing like a fool on the hills of Cochabamba, Bolivia, whether I'm playing with my kids, I'm out in the open, whatever, this is who I am. I'm about connection. I'm about community. I'm about compassion. I'm about fun, sarcasm, laughter. That's what I look for in my work, and that's the key. Another way you can do that is, this is a graph. I'm sorry, it's not a homework assignment. It could be helpful, but it's easy to do. Two lines. One is joy. The other is time. Think about the activities that you do throughout the week in your life. Where do they fall on this graph? This is something that I do all the time, every day. Two things, questions to ask. When I do this, when I'm with this person, when I'm in this setting, I don't want it to end. When it does end, I can't wait to get back to doing it again. Okay? Those are things that are up high in the joy. Where are they in the timeline? You can't have everything in the upper right quadrant. That's not life, right? That's nirvana. That's our future healthcare system. But you can move some things around. You can move them up and down on this graph. You can move things in the timeline just by kind of shifting things around a little bit. And you do have more control. You don't need to shift very much. You could even move things on the joy line by saying, I really hate this, but I do it all the time, and I have to do it. Can I make it a little less painful and a little more joyful? Or can I have somebody else in my office do it for me? Here's something really interesting amongst academic physicians that was found by Tate Schoenfeld. Physicians who spent at least 20% of their time in the aspect of work that was most meaningful to them had a rate of burnout roughly half of those who spent less than 20% effort in the activity that was most meaningful. 20% doing something that we loved, we were passionate about. The other 80%, man, we learned about that in medical school and residency. Just shut up and do what you're told, right? We can deal with a lot of this. Just give us what we love and hold on to it. Marinate in it. Let it sit there. Don't say, wow, that was an amazing encounter. Who's my next patient? That was an amazing encounter. Let me take a deep breath, marinate in it. And at the end of the day, I'm going to think back to this moment and think about how grateful I am that I have that opportunity. That's what I think about when I talk about visiting that Quechua family and examining that baby. These are things that I find helpful. Look for that 20%. Find someone that you can talk to. It's really helpful. Some practice of reflection, mindfulness. Engage in some type of activity that is outside of medicine. All of these things. But pick the thing that you feel brings you most life. Okay? All of these things have been researched and have been found to increase professional fulfillment. The Institute for Healthcare Improvement has an entire white paper on joy. It's a white paper for leadership. It's for those people that have to pay the over $1 million to replace you to try to change the system that you work under so that they don't have to pay the $1 million. Howard Thurman, I wish I could just read everything he writes every day. This guy was brilliant. Listen for the sound of the genuine in yourself. It's the only true guide you will ever have. If you can't hear it, you will all of your life spend your days on the ends of strings that someone else pulls. Find out who you are. We learn that in medical school. We learn that in residency. If you imitate whoever is your senior person, then you'll get honors. Every one of us is a different medical provider. We bring our unique talents and gifts. And yet we're evaluated on how close we are to the person supervising us because that person thinks that he, usually he, looking like me, white, male, cisgendered, straight, bald, all the rest of the things. And that person knows exactly the kind of healthcare provider that you're supposed to be. Well, that's BS. Every one of us is different and we have different gifts and talents that we bring to each other. How wonderful it would be if an attending physician were to work in a clinic with you, was your teacher, your supervisor, or whatever, and come out and say to you, listen, this is what I would do with this patient. But let me tell you, and I'm not talking about take this patient to the operating room where they don't need to be operated on. I'm talking about listening and doing things your way. I'm not the same physician you are. I'm not the same nurse practitioner you are. I'm not the same PA you are. You have a different pathway in life. As a mentor, as a teacher, my job is to help you find the type of provider you are going to be. Not the same as me. God forbid, no. Don't do that. Be who you're going to be. Because everybody else is taken. There's no more room. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Sherman. For information about upcoming CME meetings presented by Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine, visit cme.vcuhealth.org.